Victoria called on to do more for youth justice reform and the debate ongoing Ukula. Hello, I'm Adam Evans with the NIRS News. The Human Rights Law Centre says there's no reason the Victorian government can't raise the age of criminal responsibility to 14. The Allan government yesterday introduced a bill that would raise the age of criminality to 12.
So the current commitment by the government is to raise the age from 10 to 12 in this current draft law, this Youth Justice Bill, and then they have committed to further raise the age to 14 down the track, subject to them building up and delivering an alternative service model. And that's what they've committed to, and we're going to hold them to that. But we think that given how important that reform is, there's also no reason why the Victorian government couldn't do that now in this youth justice package, in terms of the intergenerational impact that that could have on children in terms of improving their lives and giving them better futures. We really think it's critical that they should be looking at doing that reform and raising the age to at least 14 years old now.
That's Monique Hurley, managing lawyer for the Human Rights Law Centre. The centre's also calling on the Victorian government to make the state's youth bail laws fairer for children by removing almost all reverse onus bail provisions and to abandon the proposed surveilling of children through electronic monitoring. It also wants the Victorian government to ban solitary confinement, strip searching and the spit-hooding of children. Federal opposition leader Peter Dutton will not reveal what the cost of the proposed construction of 7 nuclear power plants will be. When asked by journalists, Mr. Dutton said the detail was for a later stage.
We'll deal with the cost in the next stage of our policy announcements, but today I want the very clear focus to be on the fact that the sites we're proposing are end-of-use coal-fired power station sites.
The Coalition has unveiled its nuclear power policy as it heads towards the next federal election. The party has proposed reactors for 5 states around the country, claiming the first reactor will be online in 2035. A 2-year Senate inquiry into missing and murdered Indigenous women has wrapped up in Canberra. The inquiry received almost 90 submissions from across the country, with hearings held in New South Wales, Victoria, the ACT, the Northern Territory and Western Australia. The final report with the committee's findings and recommendations will be handed down on June 30. A 33-year-old man's been found guilty of the murder of his then-partner's 9-year-old daughter. Charlie's mutton was found in a barrel at the Colo River, northwest of Sydney, 4 days after she was reported missing in 2022. She'd been shot in the head and the lower back. Today, a jury found Justine Stein guilty of drugging and fatally shooting Miss Mutton at a Mount Wilson property.
You added bacon to my ice cream. I don't want bacon.
What else can I get for you?
It was wrong orders like this which has seen McDonald's dump its AI drive-through, although that's not the reason the company's given. The fast food giant will remove automated AI-based order systems from more than 100 stores across the United States. The IBM systems trial started in 2021, but customer experiences with the tech soon went viral on TikTok for all the wrong reasons. We'll have more coming up next.
Hey mob, it's Murray from the Curry, Trendy Trev here. Join me on Talk Black, weekday mornings from 11 a.m. Queensland Murray time for an hour of good yarns, talk back and more. Talk Black Mondays through to Fridays on the National Indigenous Radio Service. Too deadly, you mob.
To sport, and in the NRL, Queensland centre Hamiso Tabuai-Fadou has been back to become the leading try scorer in the State of Origin history. The 22-year-old speed demon, known as Hammer, is hitting 1.6 tries per match. Tabuai-Fadou has scored 8 tries in 5 games for the Maroons and is equal 16th on the all-time Origin try-scoring list. No other player who has played more than one Origin match has a better strike rate. To put his performance in perspective, Tabuai-Fadou is just 1 try behind former Maroons captain Darren Lockyer, who notched his 9 tries in a 36-game Origin career. The leading try scorer in Origin history is former Queensland centre Greg Inglis, who scored 18 tries in 32 games. For New South Wales, the leaders are Brad Fittler, Jared Hayne and Josh Adokar with 11 tries. To stay up to date with the NIRS news, follow us on Instagram, like us on Facebook or visit our website at nirs.org.au.
Okay, here we go.
From 2024, the Queensland Government is making kindy free for all kindy-aged children. Every child can access 15 hours free kindy a week, 40 weeks per year. Kindy is the foundation of learning for our children. Search Free Kindy Queensland for more information. Authorised by the Queensland Government, Brisbane.
Station sponsor.
We've all been feeling cost of living pressures. That's why the Australian Government is bringing in tax cuts from the 1st of July. For the drivers delivering groceries and the people buying them. For the people working in offices and the tradespeople building them. For nurses saving lives and the teachers shaping them. They're tax cuts for every taxpayer. Visit taxcuts.gov.au to find out how the 1st of July tax cuts will benefit you. Authorised by the Australian Government, Canberra.
Station sponsor.
And we have an interesting program coming up, and Gaya Baragalanunda, may God's peace be upon you wherever you are listening to the show, and we hope that you're enjoying it, and we thank you for letting us our program travel and use your spectrum wherever you are listening to this program. Joining me today is the Education Minister and the Attorney General, Yirrkala Graminya, and of course Kanyara Yalmabara, who are our regular panelists that talk about certain things here and there. And coming up later in the show, we have a pre-recorded interview with our friends from the Birriggaba Nation, Glari Bunbury, who is the Foreign Affairs and Trade Minister, on the exciting developments between our nations. Of course, we have a free trade agreement now between our nations, which is the first of its kind ever in modern times, at least on paper, between the different nations. But before we talk about that, let's have a listen to, I guess, some of the interesting articles coming from South Australia this time about an article there where Aboriginal children are unnecessarily removed from families, communities, and SA report fines. Now, this is from the ABC website, and it basically, in a nutshell, the South Australian Commissioner for Aboriginal Children and Young People found that in a single calendar year, one in two South Australian Aboriginal children are reported at least once to child protection authorities, and one in 10 are placed in out-of-home care. Guys, we're going to open it up to you to talk about this, because obviously a few years ago now, I think in 2007, 2008, Kevin Rudd apologised for this exact type of behaviour. And guess what? Australia's repeating the same thing over and over again. And you know what? I don't think they're going to stop.
So really, what's changed? Nothing. Why? Why has nothing changed? Maybe it's the white Australia. Start to think about that. You know, it's the white Australia. It's still continuing. It's on a roll. It's doing its thing. So, you know, it's based. It's really based on the Constitution, which is what Australia was made of. And what was Australia made of? Who united under the Constitution? They were the Australians. They were the British subjects. They were the people of the colonies, to where genocide did take place. It was actually stealing the children from one of the nations, you know, the Indigenous nation, and taking them over to the colonial world. But it's still, nothing has changed fundamentally underneath. The structural change hasn't been altered. So, yes, it's still about suppressing the Aboriginal people. It's still about holding them down. It's still about taking their children away. It's still about breaking the family. Because a bit later on, I'll go a little bit further on that with where it's going, I know it's in the Yirrkala Commission. But it is totally all about the white Australia policy. They'll break the Aboriginal people so that they cannot assert their sovereignty. And, you know, this is all about education, and what a better bloke to have than the Education Minister to even talk about this.
Well, Yirrkala, you just had all your family here, and obviously it's a beautiful thing, your grannies and your sons and daughters, and, you know, family is everything when you think about it. That's all we have on this earth in terms of, you know, connection and blood, things like that, and love. That's where a lot of our love comes from. But really the breakup of the family unit is it's a sad thing that has dire impact, and you can see that in the juvenile detention rates now, and how many Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders are in correctional facilities, etc.
Yes, it is sad, and you know, I think, you know, Gunyara referred to the position as education minister. I think this is more of a social services minister position that I also hold, where these types of things are destroying the fabric of society, and a society that has existed so harmoniously for thousands of years and had this type of way of living and so forth being overlaid just for the last few hundred years. It just doesn't make sense what's come into the country from a cultural perspective. And it certainly has a deep, deep impact on it. And, you know, it's the Yidinji way to show a better way, I think. That's sort of what we're trying to do and trying to share with others, the existing governments, that, you know, the traditional way of dealing with issues and family problems is far superior to the way it's been done now, because it's always been done from a cultural perspective. Those with the wisdom would deal with problems, would help decide on what might need to be done or how it needs to be done, not a government. There's no way would a government have the understanding to do this sort of thing. It would never be the social services that would do these sorts of things. It would be the social services under the direction of the elders and the wisdom that comes from traditional cultures to have the knowledge to know what to do in circumstances. But, you know, that's in a traditional perspective. Today we've got a totally different ball game. We've got a government imposing their laws and taking children away from families. You know, that didn't happen traditionally. That's just not something that would have happened. And it certainly presents a difficult problem, but it's about unity. You know, it's about how can we work through and find a better way together. And that's what Yidinji is here for.
Yeah, I think it's really important that you stress that point about the Yidinji Nation providing a template on how we want to deal with it. And that's not our design, that's the design of the elders and the kinship system here, and the government is to provide, a codified version of that so the rest of the world can see this is how we operate and this is why you can't do this to us anymore.
Well, you know, the reason I refer to the education minister is if you want to fix up the flaw that's in the Commonwealth of Australia, in South Australia, why they're taking the kids, you know, if you wanted to really fix that, you would educate. Would educate your people, your Australians. You would educate those coppers. You would educate those family services. You would educate them that yous actually might be exceeding the authority of the Australian Constitution. You would educate them that those mob have sovereignty, that you are still taking their children. You'd even go as far as to educate the Indigenous children that they don't have to be part of the Commonwealth of Australia in accord with Article 5 of UNDRIP, you know, the UN Declaration of Rights for Indigenous People, says you can go back and revitalise all your stuff. Bring back all the institutions, school, the whole box and dice. And, you know, like Yerlam just stated, you know, the Yidinji way is to educate the children, and he's doing a damn good job at that too, by the way, to enlighten them that they don't have to be an Australian if they don't want to be, you know, that they have their cultures, their roots in their land. But, you know, we were talking about, you said Kevin, you know, Kevin Rudd, the Prime Minister, he said sorry. Sorry means sorry, you don't do it again. But they're still doing it. Why they're still doing it? Because those Australians that aren't Indigenous are the ones who think they got the God-given right to enforce a legal identity upon those children. They got the right to take the children from these Indigenous societies who have not, I'll say this again, have not ceded their sovereignty. They still have their sovereignty on their land and under their law, which is not Australian law. But they're not telling the Aboriginal people that. They're not telling the Indigenous people that. It's all about education. If they want to change this problem, you know, 1 in 2 being reported to the family services, 1 in 10 being taken away. If they want to change that, educate those young children that they can go back to their original world where they really belong, where they aren't being reported, where the elders can take charge of them and really look after them under the ways that were there before the white fella come. But will they do that? No, they won't, because they're going to lose something.
Yeah, there's something absolutely crooked, because you know, to have someone in detention, for example, or in a home, it'll cost the state, let's say, $120,000 or plus. You know, there's varying figures about how much it costs the state to have someone in a correctional facility. Now, why isn't half of that being spent on the family to to improve the situation. It stinks. It is about big money, and unfortunately, that's what seems to have taken priority over these things.
Yes, of course it has. Money's ruling the roost, isn't it? One of the insights which I've been been shared with me, and looking at it from a cultural perspective, a traditional perspective, is that when something is being learnt, it's not about the words; it's about the person and who they are delivering it. And so there's an invisible link between teacher and students. There is not something that is necessarily talked about; it's something that is experienced. And you know, you can't use a better example of words such as you guys have talked about, insofar as Kevin Rudd saying, sorry, this won't happen again. Those are all words. What's actually happening? What's happening? It's just continuing. So there is a country, well, we won't call it a country, there is a legal structure called Australia that is delivering a message silently to every Australian saying that it's okay to steal, it's okay to take, it's okay to do what you want. And we'll arrest you if we need to, sort of thing. It's a false message. The verbal message is false, and the reality is that children are still being taken.
Well, the reality is, the Bringing Them Home report said that this amounted to genocide. Children a Little Sacred report, Royal Deaths in Custody report. You can name a million reports because Aboriginal people are probably overanalyzed anyway. The problems keep resurfacing. So it is the absolute, you'd be a madman to think that it's going to change somewhere if Dracula's running the blood bank.
Well, that brings me to another point. Aboriginal people are homeless on their own homeland, on their own country. They are homeless. Where do you bring the kids home to if they're homeless? Do they have a home to come back to? No, they don't. The overcrowding in housing is just unbelievable in all these areas. But, you know, you look at what do you get under native title? You get absolutely nothing. Under native title, if you actually read a native title determination, you can camp for 3 or 4 days in one place before you've got to move. You can't go and build a house on there. You can't go and extract minerals. You can't go and do anything on there other than camp or go fishing or whatever. How does that give the kids a home to go to when they've got to go and live in a community or a mission? And I'll call them a mission. They're not a community, by the way, because these are open-air prisons. They're concentration camps to keep the Aboriginal people away from their rightful place with their resources. You know, so this is still going on. This is the white Australia still being committed here. It's the colonial manifestation. And, you know, people may laugh at that, but it is not. It's a proper manifestation of colonialism, because only New South Wales the other day, they had the King's birthday celebration going on, and they raised the King's standard, which meant the King was present. They raised his colours at the parade there, at their ceremony. Then they pulled down the colours. You know, the King has left the country. So when the colours go up, he's here. When they pull him down, he leaves. Do people understand this, who the King is? He's the white fella over in England who's out here. This is the manifestation of colonialism. It's shown in all their ceremony. You know, and that was a good example of this King's birthday. You know, once again, the King himself, this is a perfect example of a person, a legal identity that's created by law. His birthday's in November, the real bloke, the human being, his birthday, I think, is in November. Yet they have a birthday party for him here in June, or, you know, what? This is all make-believe stuff.
Ah, oh, it's a public holiday, though.
It is a public holiday. And most Australians will think like that, oh, we need to have a holiday. It's a holiday for the Australians, maybe, but the Aboriginal people are being oppressed continually by this manifestation of colonialism every day. There is no holiday away from the oppression.
Oh, look, you know, I'm waiting for the Indigenous newspapers or whatever it is to say, you know, so-and-so was the first bummer to cross the Mexican border into the US, and now he's got a free hotel in New York and some money, you know, because he's living it up in New York, you know, and that's what's happening. People are just flooding into the United States, and the government there has been very, very generous and hospitable. You wonder why people do that. You know, maybe they're fleeing from a more tougher situation, or maybe not. But at the end of the day, I think what is interesting is that I've rarely seen blackfella seek asylum overseas, because this is their country, and this is Yidinji territory. Why would we go anywhere else? And I think it's a testament to them that they want to change it here. You know, I'm not having a go at people that run away from persecution and stuff. That's a legitimate reason to do that if it's about survival. But here, you know, what I find very difficult sometimes is that even blind Freddy can see it. And it's just these apparatchiks, you know, this unseen faces of whoever it is still trying to run the shop and control the gravy train.
Well, it's just another form of lying, isn't it? By not telling the whole truth, to continually not represent what's going on, tell the truth of what really happened here, what's going on, to keep these organs, you know, like we're talking about the South Australian Family Services, tell them. Tell them what's going on. Tell those people on the front line what's really going on. Not the clowns in the government. Not those at the top. They know what's going on. That's why they're continuing this charade. They're continuing the ball going. You know, tell the people who are actually going out taking the kids. You're actually taking the kids from an Aboriginal nation into Australia. You're bringing them into our world when they've got no right to be doing it. You know, these are all the issues, right from the lowly people at the front line right up to the government. They will be held accountable sooner or later by someone, somewhere. The world is changing quite rapidly, and this is what we say to people. You just can't keep doing the same old colonial manifestation thing forever and a day. You've got to surrender to what's good. Tell the truth to the people. I know it's slowly starting to come out, very slowly, but it's part of education. We're trying to help the Australians to get educated onto what really happened here, and it's all about how do you know, you know? Mm. If you were never told the truth, how do you know?
And without going into too many details, we had an experience and an incident where a Yidinji family wanted the Yidinji authorities to be involved, and that was our police at the time, and they were called to deal with the family matter with a bit of cultural background and understanding, because that's what was warranted at the time, because they didn't want to involve any other ones, because there may have been other things that have been outstanding, or they simply didn't trust, let's say, the QPS or family services in this instance. And I think that's a very important thing, because obviously the Yidinji police, who, you know, did everything that a normal police would do, I guess, but could understand and actually keep the peace. And not only that, have some sort of mediation process where parties agreed to act a certain way and behave within a certain manner that would not escalate certain things, and that was a wonderful thing.
Could you trust Queensland Police? That's the big issue. Can anyone trust Queensland Police if they're not telling the whole truth? At the Yurok Commission last year, you know, the police commissioner, Victorian police commissioner, actually said, yeah, look, we acknowledge the sovereignty of the Aboriginal people. It's still going. And yes, we acknowledge we've done a lot of bad things to them. And yes, we acknowledge that this is going on. Queensland Police refused. They refused to attend a truth-telling commission. Could you trust someone like that?
Well, they just disbanded the First Nations advisory group as well. So you wonder what's going on there, which puts good police officers in an awkward position, because there are many. I would say they're more than the crooked ones, for example, by far. But it's the executive that has to show leadership now, just like the Supreme Court of Queensland is showing leadership by asking Yidinji to open up the law season, just like other things are taking place, just like other international actors are asking Yidinji for permission for certain things as well.
Well, it's not the poor people on the cold front.
Exactly.
I witnessed that firsthand, where one of the police officers said, do we have to do this? And as she was told, it's orders. You will do as you're told. So it's where the orders are coming from. It's the upstairs building, that part of it. So can you trust? It's not the poor local down on the, you know, on the beat.
Mm.
They're just doing their job, and they will actually lose their job if they don't do it. You know, if they don't obey orders, they'll lose it. So they've got to listen to what they're being told to do. And so who's telling them this? Is it the governor that tells sets the overall agenda? Because you've got to remember one thing. The governor is the king's representative in the states. They're just like the governor general is the king's representative at the Commonwealth level. The governors are here. And these governors are all part of the white Australia, the colonial manifestation. They're still going What did I say about raising the colours, the King's colours the other day? You know, the King himself, the King of England, the UK, the King of his other 15 realms, you know. So they brought the colours out and raised them. This is the colonial manifestation. Still here, setting the agenda at the upper end of the police force, you know. This is the white Australia. You will do as you're told. We will bash the Aboriginal people. We'll keep them off their land. We'll keep them homeless. We'll keep them poor and destitute.
Yeah, you know, the cultural training that the police went through, because obviously there's officers of different colours and backgrounds, but they're great listeners. First and foremost, that's why we make a really good police officer for the Yidinji Nation, and they truly desire to help. And I think most police officers go into, whether it's Australia or wherever, they go in there because they want to help. They want to help keep law and order and criminals from thriving. But the Yidinji police have that upper edge because of the uniform and the constitution and where the intention of the nation is heading. That makes families very, very safe around our police and our way of doing things.
Yeah, of course. And what other way would you want to have it? You know, it's the cultural training made a huge difference. It was fantastic that Bumia, one of our police commissioner, was able to deliver that amongst other sessions that they went through. And, you know, it gives the officers some confidence to have an understanding of the Yidinji Nation, you know, what it means to be on country and what it means to have people from other nations around us visiting and how to interact with them and support them. You know, there's been stories from some of our police who have helped situations where security and other police officers of the Australian realm are, you know, looking just to mistreat visitors to our nation from other nations, our bordering neighbours. So it's it makes a big difference when the approach is done from a cultural perspective.
And even with Ganyara, the Indigenous liaison team within QPS and AFP and all those, they do a fantastic job. But they do they have a limited power base from where we stand. But the whole idea of working together was, you know, a really nice gesture there last year, the year before, where our police would go with QPS and do those types of things because they could see the value in it. The issue is at the top end, the higher end, the echelon tower, where they still want to control the whole game. And, you know, that's winding down now. It's getting a bit stale. But the beauty about the Yidinji way is that Australia wins because they get the expertise and not only that, they get to use the Yidinji sovereignty to actually assert the laws with confidence, the same way that the Yidinji police have confidence to move in and conduct things.
It sure is. See, you've got to remember the police are there to enforce the law, to uphold the law. So it's their job to be doing it. It's where the laws are made. Now, the laws are made in the state of Queensland for the Queensland police, for example, that they've got to go and uphold the Queensland law and also the Australian law, basically. But think about that colonial manifestation. It hasn't got a treaty to be here, has it? It's got no right to be legitimately here on this block, you know, on our country. What if we done it with deal with China? People's Republic of China, come in, bring your police in. We'll educate them up to our way. Start to take over the place. Raise the red and yellow flag over here. You're welcome to do a treaty with us, and you're welcome to give us all that we require under the treaty. You know, let's work together. It's a power-sharing arrangement. That's how treaties work between sovereign nations. And what did they say in the Uluru Statement? That the Indigenous peoples haven't had their sovereignty ceded or extinguished. And they are the owners of the land under their law, not under Australian law. So if you haven't ceded your sovereignty, you've got the right to do a deal to give some of it away in part or in whole, doesn't matter. And it might only be a little bit, but maybe it might bring in the Chinese, for example. Bring in the Chinese to do the administrative work on our territory. Maybe to defend our border, which is what we're trying to say to Australia. Your job under a treaty will be those big ticket items, you know, the international stuff. Defend the border. Defend our people from, you know, anyone else. Defend it from the British, from the Canadians, from the Americans, from the Chinese.
Those New Zealanders.
Oh, yeah, they're a bit of a dead loss, you know, that lot. But, no, look, it is to defend our border, to, you know, to oversee that we are not being run over by doctrine of the rest of the world, you know. that international law is there for a reason, and Australia likes to claim it's a good international citizen. And I'll tell you right now, as a colonial manifestation, it's acting contrary to the Charter of the UN. It is a terrible citizen of international law. It says one thing, it does the exact opposite.
It was interesting what Putin said at the weekend about them not being monopolists or colonialists, and they've never done that, they said, which is quite interesting given the very anti-colonialist stance by not only Russia but many other nations now standing up and saying to the US, Israel and others that you need to pipe down a bit.
Well, the US is a manifestation of colonialism. Canada is a manifestation of colonialism. Well, that's what I was saying about the king, King Charles III, and all his other personalities that he has. He's the king of Australia. He's the king of the UK, king of Australia. And when he's not here, the Governor General is his representative here. But when he's here, the Governor General stands down and the King of Australia is here all of a sudden. You know, but there's 15 realms, I think, or 16 realms all up, something along that line, that this one man... Yeah, we're not counting here. But this one man is the head of state of these 15 or 16 realms. That is a manifestation of colonialism. Why does he want here? Why does he want Australia? Why does he want it? It's this, the mining pit of the world. It's got all the resources. Australia could be self-sufficient if it was done properly. But it's part of the bigger picture of the colonial manifestation as a terrible international citizen. This is why we're going into the new multipolar world.
Yeah, they've only got Marmite HP sauce, whatever it is. That's all they got. And some bad cricket teams and things like that. But anyway, on a serious note, you're listening to your Black Law Tribal edition right across the planet. Thanks to the Edinger Broadcast Service. If you're listening to this inside of Australia, it's via the National Indigenous Radio Service. Thanks to our friends at Bumabipa Media 98.7 FM. We'll be back after the break.
Hey, this is Khalid D and you're listening to BBM 98.7.
Oh, you're not meant to be lonely.
Yes, welcome back to the show. Coming up now is our interview, a pre-recorded one, with our dear friends from the Birrigubba Nation, in particular the Foreign Affairs and Trade Minister, Galari Bunbury. If you haven't heard, the Edinger Nation has now conducted a successful free trade agreement with our friends from south, down south, and it's taken a little while to get there, but it's all a result of the great work between the two different nations and their governments. Galari, I'm just wondering, first of all, welcome, and how did you find the city of Ghimoi compared to good old Birrigubba country?
Well, thank you very much, Murumu. And thanks very much for receiving us and having us here on Ghimoi territory. It's always an honour and a pleasure to visit Yidinji. And a wonderful day as always. We always have a lot to talk about and a lot to discuss, and the things that are moving forward is so exciting, particularly in the area of trade and commerce, and looking forward to the future. So it's just wonderful. Thank you.
It is wonderful. And I'm wondering, what are people back home talking about? What are they saying about sovereignty and the government? And obviously, because they'd be proud of it, starting these important footsteps of self-governments and self-determination.
Well, as it happens, we are gearing up for our community presentations on Friday night for Birrigubba Nation. So this is letting everybody know what it is all about. Given a lot of the things that are happening in the Australian world right now, people are starting to get a bit concerned about things and privacy matters and their CBDC that they're trying to roll out, taking cash away. So there's lots of concerns everywhere at the moment, and we are so excited to be able to offer people and say to people, if they would like to become a part of a sovereign nation, then now is the opportunity to come and find out all about it. So people are excited to hear more.
And I understand that you are making those presentations, and part of that is the matter of citizenship or naturalisation, and obviously that's quite an important
step in building the nation. I mean, we know that the tribe is there, we know the land is there, but to actually have some sort of mechanism where people can be part of the Birriggubba story as they can be here with the Yidinji is very exciting indeed.
It is so exciting. And I think the beautiful thing about it is that, you know, these nations are really starting from the ground up. And so many people all throughout their life get stuck in something that they're not particularly happy doing. It's just to pay the bills and keep going with life, really. You don't get a chance to get creative in what you love to do. So we're actually saying to you, do what you love. You know, come aboard and actually figure out what it is that you love to do. Because when you do that, you get creative. It's just a beautiful journey for us, and it's incredible to be able to open this up to the wider population, to start bringing members on board, to contribute to a world that they want.
And what are the elders saying about it? Tell us some of the things that they're talking about, and some of them obviously involved with setting up government and being part of it as well.
Our elders are very, very excited about this. Like so many, it's been a bit of a roundabout for so many years and stuck in a loop of what the government has actually wanted them to do, not being able to get back to their traditional ways, not being able to exercise what they know in the environment that has been their home for forever and a day. So to be able to have this process and for them to know that they are actually going to have the freedom to do that is so exciting. I think they're just really so looking forward to that position where they are able to get back to who they are.
It's been a long journey. You know, we're getting on in our lives and in terms of the age and things like that. But it's such an exciting and reinvigorating journey that there's a lot of exciting things going on, and it's not like a false excitement or one that's going to fall in the ditch, because it's based on the truth and there's a foundation there that is something that I guess most people really want, something that's real. And are you finding that with people that you speak to about like sovereignty and you know, Birriggubba?
Yes, I think people have really, particularly over the last 3 to 4 years, come to the comprehension of what a lie life has been, really, in the sense of a lot of things, so many things that we have been taught, so many things that we thought were happening aren't happening. And just to have that element, that ground level truth of this is what it's about. This is the transparency that everyone has been yearning for, particularly with the increase over the last 3 to 4 years. So it does reinvigorate you. And the people that we talk to who really comprehend what this is about get just as excited as we are. They want to be involved. They want to play their part. They want to be right there at the beginning to be able to build this world that nobody really has even dreamed of. Because coming out of that sleepiness, if you like, to really waking up, it gives you a boost. It gives you more energy. It gives you excitement. And it gives you forward thinking. And that's what it's all about. And I just want to say too, at Morimu, at this point, Yidinji has been leading the way with this for a long time now, you know, over 10 years with your government. And for you to extend your hand of friendship has just been absolutely incredible. And we couldn't do this without you guys. So thank you.
Well, and it goes vice versa too. And you know, if it wasn't for the leadership of the elders and the Yidinji families, and all the families that really here, it makes sense that people do want truth and they want justice and settlement, security and peace. And you know, these things are really important when you look about what's happening around the world. There's wars, there's famine, there's lots of stuff that's going on. And, you know, I think credit to the Birriggaba elders for having the same foresight, because obviously I would say that after talking to some of them at least, you know, they really don't want people to experience that. I mean, we've had lots of people come to the continent who have run away from wars and persecution and things like that. So it's the last thing you want to be actually happening here. And ultimately, the leadership has to come not from politicians in Canberra or wherever, but really from the mob and different tribal mob and the families and the eldership and the knowledge holders.
And one of the most beautiful things about that is that it's all about the future generations. It really is. And that is evident when you start talking to the elders and they start to talk with you about what their visions are. It is all about those future generations and giving them that space where they don't actually live in a world that we've seen unfold. And it's just opening up their minds, opening up their hearts, opening up their way of life to be able to find the balance in their own lives with without the constraints that most have. So it's just beautiful.
I guess what's one of the common things that you find about people when you're talking about sovereignty and around the different places? Why is there an interest in this space? And you know, what's brought people to this, to this subject matter?
I think more so now than ever, there has been so much information that has come out particularly over the last 4 years. And I keep referencing that because that's just the way that it is. And people have really, not only have they processed a hell of a lot of information, but they have really started to get to know themselves, because sovereignty actually is all about yourself, and it's about learning who you are and who you really are. And as people have gone on that journey, they've really started to recognize that perhaps they actually haven't been living as they should be, as a sovereign being, as the person that is always striving for the highest good, as the person that is building that community. You know, we've seen a lot of things come in where it's all about division. It's all about divide and conquer, really. And that's right down to family relationships and, you know, even just raising children and the way that children have been educated and making it so difficult that both parents have to work so they don't have that family relationship that perhaps you and I grew up in. It's just a different world today. And I think with this journey for people, as they really start to get to know themselves, the ethics and the morals and the values are starting to come back in so much more than we have ever seen in our lifetime. Well,
yes, I think it's really vital that people start to grasp the situation. And, you know, I was talking about this last week with people and how there is a concerted effort by some group around the place to really undo the traditional tribal kinship systems here. And if you can break down those things, you can break down a nation. When that particular design, in this case a Yidinji design, the clan kinship system, the extended family, all that part, if that's broken down and split up through stolen generations, genocide and forced assimilation, these blunt instruments are there to actually keep people scattered and in a place of disarray and confusion. And I think the Yidinji elders, certainly the ones that I have been speaking with for many years now, absolutely 100% seen that coming and been victims of it. And, you know, most people that we know you can see people that are been in the corrections facilities or, you know, people who may have had children taken away from them. Even, you know, after Kevin Rudd said sorry, you know, record numbers of children being in juvenile detention and in and out of home care and all that kind of stuff. So you got to come to a point where... you know, why isn't that not working? And the reason is because the tribes have the solution and the remedy to move this whole continent and the whole planet forward in a way where peace and security is within grasp.
100%. I think this has been going on for such a long time, and the very Gubba elders, they and your elders, a lot of elders around the country have lived through so many different mechanisms of trying to break down that family unit by, as you said, removing them from by removing from country, by stolen generation, by the genocide, by many, many different mechanisms. The only thing that I think has changed now is the way that they do it. It's still exactly the same things that are coming around and showing that face, which is the face of division, the face of removing children. They just do it in a different way now. They do it in a way that makes people believe that they are doing it for the betterment of the child. But it's not. It creates so much confusion. Then any removal from country creates a confusion of the connection to country, and that's a big thing.
Yeah, and, you know, the very earliest examples of that were people from the First Fleet. This is, you know, they were stolen too, and they were chucked. They didn't have much option about that. And, you know, I often think about... where people's journeys have have come from in terms of their how they got here, even that's what this is about really. When this is sort of in a reflection of sovereignty about who you are and where you come from and all that stuff, and so who made us? That's the big part of it too. Obviously, the creator, Gaiabara here, and. So I think that these things are really matters that people will ponder a few times in their life, but more so now with this kind of conversation we're having. And the internet has also bought into lots of other different opinions and things like that. So people have the ability to study these a little bit more if they need to. I'm just wondering now... what are the priorities for the Birriggubba Nation for this year? And let's say for over the next few years now, what are the top targets that your government is putting on the table?
So first and foremost is the education on what the nation is about. And as I mentioned before, that starts on Friday night with our community presentations. And then opening up for membership, that's really important. You can have a nation with just a couple, but that's not what it's about. It's for everybody, and it's really about building the community. So we have been building community in our area for quite some time now, which has been a beautiful process, and you can really see how that's morphed into something beautiful, and it's a reminder of what it means to be there for each other, for your friends, your family, your group, your community. So having said that, with building community, I think that's also contributing to the fact that people are really excited to actually become a part of a nation that's the foundation of it, that's the basis of it. So that's first and foremost, and there'll be education sessions, you know, in different parts of Birregubba Territory. Then establishing, going forward on that journey, establishing the different aspects that make up the nation. And, you know, we've had some amazing discussions on trade and commerce today, and there's so much unfolding in that area, and I think it's a really exciting journey as both our nations go through with that. And we talked about the dollar, the currency system and all of that sort of thing. That's a big undertaking, and it's an education process again to have people shift their mind from one to another. Simultaneously, we are looking at a food network, our own food network, and groundwork's been done for that. So the next step is to get the team together to actually put that into place. You know, we've got people looking at the education side of things as well, the health side of things. So there is a lot happening on the table, which is exciting. And all of these things take time and people to participate in it, to build. So that's sort of the journey unfolding at the moment.
You're listening to Black Law Tribal Edition right across the planet today, thanks to the Yidinja Broadcast Service, which is broadcasting here on the Yidinja Territory. If you're listening to it outside of the Yidinja Territory, it's probably via our friends at Bumabipra 98.7 FM, who broads inside the Commonwealth via the National Indigenous Radio Service. And my guest today is our wonderful friends from the Birregubba Nation, in particular, the Honourable Minister of Foreign Affairs and Trade, Larry Bunbury. And It is a pleasure to have you here. Last time we had a good yak was of note was in on the Ngambri Territory, Ngunnawal Territory, with the Australian National University, the College of Law, looking at on how a nation-to-nation treaty might look like. And, of course, we already had one. We did our here's one we prepared earlier. But I think that was also an exciting milestone for both our nations.
That was an incredible trip, I think, for all of the ministers from both Birregubba and Yidinji that attended. The opportunity to participate in something like that is... you can't put a price on it. And a big thank you to the Australian National University for actually facilitating that. But the learning journey, and you're right, we did have our treaty in place, and as it turns out, was a very good treaty. But just going through the process of treaty when you are dealing with other countries or other nations in a formal sense was a learning curve that all of us were very, very grateful for. And then also with the opportunity to have a moot court and have that experience of standing in front of judges and what that might possibly look like should we find ourselves in that situation was invaluable. So not to mention the time that we just loved spending with the Yidinji government and ministers as well was the, you know, it was just great to be a part of that.
It was, and the historic signing as well. It's all very new to us, but Bumi went travelled down through your territory to go to the Yithabal Narakbal Yukum Yukum territory, where not only you witnessed that particular agreement, but then we had our own little session to do that as well. Now I wasn't there for that, but Bumi assisted with that. And was the senior crown officer for the Yidinji Nation, that is. These little things, I guess, in future years, how do you think people will see them?
I think they're going to play an extremely important role. Every single thing that happens is history making right now, and particularly with the nations, Yidinji Nation, Birregubba Nation, and the other ones that are starting to stand up as well. Because it really is the earmark of coming into a freedom that none of us have really known in our lifetime. So these things will go down in the history book. People will look at this in 100 years' time and be like, wow, that's a really courageous, I guess, because it is in these times thing to do. And thank you. I think that's what people will do.
Yes, I'm very excited. Let's change the pace a bit now. Let's look at, for those who may not know where the Birri Gubba Nation is, I mean, just tell us about the country, where it is, or give us the Australian description, for example, and what you love about living there.
So Birri Gubba stands for Native Bee, and our territory in the Australian
description.
Yep. It goes just south of Townsville, out past Charters Towers, follows the Great Dividing Range, dips down below Rockhampton, and then comes back in at the coast at St. Lawrence. So it's quite a large territory there. It's made up of 20 different clans, and it's quite large, but that's okay. It's based on language. So whatever that looks like, then, you know, for each area in their language area is what their territories should look like. We love living there. You know, we have, as I said, mentioned before, the community that has come together is incredible. We've very close relationships with community in quite a number of different places on our country. So it's just really an incredibly exciting experience, and something that I know that we're all so proud to be involved with.
And in terms of trade export opportunities, rather, what are some of the things that you... I mean, you mentioned food there, and food sovereignty is really important because, you know, there may be some sort of a global shortage in the future. We don't know. But also, the I would say that the promotion of organic and homemade food is really important as well. But what other things are happening that you can let us know a little bit about?
So, yes, food definitely is a big thing. And the other things that we've just got underway is some health products, absolutely natural health products, homegrown, using the things that are grown on country to actually provide the benefits of a healthy lifestyle. So we're very focused on prevention rather than anything else, because that's really where it starts. And we've got a wonderful team that grows quite a few of the natural herbs and natural remedy type trees, which are then made into two health products.
Yeah, and I guess one of the big ones potentially is indigenous or native ingredients for cooking, and having that kind of stuff maybe entering into European restaurants, and we just don't know until we put it all out there, right?
That's right.
Is there something that's really that you have a that you'd like to see happen in the next few years? I mean, you can be a bit selfish if you like, and dream big, please, but what's something that you really hope and wish for that that the Birri Gubba Nation or that will happen across the continent here with all the different mobs? So what's your idea of a dream situation?
For everybody to actually come together, to leave what they've learnt behind so that that judgment doesn't come in, because there is still a lot of judgment. Just to put it all aside, for each person to really start to get them know themselves before they project their thoughts, their ideas onto others, and really learn what this is about in the sense of both an individual level and also collectively. And when that does happen, that's when the country comes together. That, more than anything, is what I would like to see, is for people to actually start to really stand on their own two feet, to be able to know that we each have within us the capability to do amazing things. And when you get that and then you bring that together collectively, then you have the opportunity to change the world
And that was the Honourable Glari Bunbury, the Foreign Affairs and Trade Minister for the Birriggup Nation there, winding up the show. Gents, before we head off, some final comments. Yirilim?
Once again, the message that's always been the same from the Yidinji Nation is, you know, we're here to help, as this happens with Birriggup Nation. We have supported them through their journey and do it at no charge, and we're happy to continue that with any other nation in the continent.
Yeah, look, and if you're going to be assert your sovereignty, really assert it properly as proper sovereigns, you know, as your nation is the original sovereign nation here on this country. It hasn't ceded its authority. Start to bring about your law, bring about the conditions. That's something that Australia can actually cede. You know, don't do the half-hearted game of, oh, I'm going to use the Australian identity. Be like King Charles, who's got